exercise your parental control, or if this sort of thing bothers you, then exercise control over what you're hearing and tune out. Coming up shortly, in a moment, is Gordon Michael Scallion. And I don't make this claim about very many of my guests at all. Danyon Brinkley is one. Gordon is another. Gordon is the real McCoy. You're about to hear the real McCoy. So all I can say is, brace yourself. Gordon may be best known for the prediction of the Northridge earthquake, which he made, the Landers, California earthquake, the Kobe earthquake in Japan, Hurricane Andrew, and the 1998 global temperature record. He recently predicted the U.S. would see the highest number of tornadoes on record. Guess what? In January, we broke all previous U.S. tornado records. Coming up in a moment, Gordon Michael Scallion. I have a special, but it's really going to hear may be disturbing, and you should tune out if you are disturbed by the kind of information you're about to hear. But, I mean, we're dealing here with a man who, in addition to predicting Northridge, Landers, Kobe, Hurricane Andrew, the global temperature record, and, of course, the tornado record, predicted a significant earthquake would hit South America on January 25th. As you know, a devastating earthquake hit South America with great loss of life and property. Gordon Michael Scallion has been featured on NBC's Ancient Prophecies, Fox TV's Sightings, A&E, The History Channel, The Roseanne Show, E! Entertainment, CNN, The Wall Street Journal, Details Magazine, Rolling Stone Magazine, and numerous other publications, radio and TV shows. He will be featured in upcoming TV episodes of Unsolved Mysteries and the History Channel's The Millennium. Gordon Michael Scallion is editor of his bi-monthly publication, Earth Changes Report, where his predictions and teachings are presented. He is author of the best-selling book, Notes from the Cosmos, a futurist's insights into the world of dream prophecy and intuition, now in its fifth printing, an autobiography about his life as a visionary, and containing his global earth change predictions for the years 1991 through 2012. Many of you have been waiting for this moment. Here he is, Gordon Michael Scallion. Gordon, welcome.
Good evening, or good morning, rather.
For you, it's morning, all right.
Yep.
You are in New Hampshire, aren't you?
Correct.
Uh-huh. You are also a fellow ham operator.
Yeah, we've never talked on the air, but I have seen pictures of your new ham antenna farm that you just put up. Very impressive.
Well, we certainly could talk. We'll have to pick a frequency and a time and give that a try.
Absolutely.
All right, for the audience, and there are some who are not familiar with you because we are on in so many new markets, we're going to try and do it in this first segment and wrap it up by the bottom of the hour because there's so much to talk about. But obviously, we need to tell the audience how you do what you are able to do. What happened to you that brought all of this on, Gordon?
Like you, my background was technical, doing satellite communications work and design, and I had been doing that since I was 9 years old. But in the end of the 70s, late 70s, I had a health crisis, and that health crisis totally changed my life. In a period of 24 hours, I went from a normal technical person where everything was linear, everything you could measure. Mm-hmm. You know, science was reality to me. Everything else was wishy-washy. The health crisis hit, and it put me in the hospital for 24 hours.
You lost your voice in the middle of a very important speech, and they took you to the hospital.
Exactly. My voice simply locked up in the middle of a presentation. The people who were there in the presentation thought I was having some form of a stroke.
Sure.
There was no pain. It's just that I could not speak. Went to the hospital. They were going to keep me for observation. And while in the hospital, waiting for Johnny Carson to come on around 11 o'clock on the East Coast, Carson came on at 11:30, so I had a half an hour to watch the news. And I was sitting with a notepad, just kind of reviewing the project I was working on. And in the room, colors began to emanate from the doorway. And at first, I thought that they had some kind of equipment out in the hall. The colors were blue, and I assumed that I've seen that before on pieces of equipment or certain lighting, so I didn't pay too much attention to it. And then a few seconds went by, and now the lights were emanating inside of the room. And so I put the pad down, and I looked up. I was the only one in the room. And before another few seconds went by, the whole room lit up. There were colors just dancing everywhere. It was like someone came in with a laser show and flashed it all around. And at that point, I really started to dig my heels in, because this was something that I could not see where it was coming from or anything about it. They had put two IVs, and one in each arm, and bottled on tubes on either side of the bed, so my mobility was very limited. But as I dug in, I reached for the nurse call button, just in a panic, and as I reached for it, one of the bottles started swinging on the left. I reached over to stabilize that bottle. The other bottle started swinging, and the nurse call button went to the floor. At that instant, the colors in the room changed. It became very mist-like, almost like you were in a fog. And various pictures and symbols were actually floating in the room. And terror is probably the most accurate word I could use at this stage. And then it hit me. I said, it's the IVs. I'm having some kind of a reaction to what's in the IVs.
Sure, sure. What was in the IVs?
Well, in the morning, I found out that the doctor came in and that there was glucose, that there was nothing, that I was dehydrated.
Nothing.
And so immediately, of course, my mind went other places, that, you know, when they were talking about they couldn't find anything wrong with me, that I perhaps should look into another area. Obviously, they were referring to psychological batteries of tests and examinations. And so, you know, as long as I could feel technically that this was something that could be fixed, that if it's something to do with a brain problem or something, that we could take some CAT scans, we can look at things. But
and they did do that. Now, Gordon, when you lost your voice, that must have been, even, I mean, for you personally, you must have been wondering initially the same things, whether I'm having a stroke or what's happening to me. It must have scared the hell out of you.
The terror hit me first, back the day before, for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. I think the reaction of the people that were in the room when it first happened was the scariest part, because their reaction was pure terror. And I found out later that one of the people there had just lost somebody in their family through a stroke. And so, you know, in my mind it was, you know, am I really having a stroke?
At least for a few minutes. I suppose once you kind of wait for the other shoe to drop. If you lose your voice, you probably figure the next thing is I'm going to keel over.
I just sat down. I mean, I there was no pain. That was the, you know, in my mind is racing really quick, you know. Did I eat something? You know, have I been poisoned?
Sure.
Is it some kind of a reaction? It kept coming back to my brain over and over again. I would think, something's going on in my brain. Something's going on here. But there was no pain. You know, I didn't feel any discomfort in either side of my body. You know, I'm checking for all the things that, you know, I had gotten to that point of I had reached, you know, in my 30s, and when friends of mine were starting to have difficulties going through crisis, and I finally got to the stage, I said, this has got to be some kind of a stress-induced thing. I found that hard to really rationalize at the time, because, you know, I was living on a 30-foot sailboat. I was conducting my business. I had an office on shore, but I would spend months at a time out sailing.
Gee, hard life, Gordon.
Yeah, I figured that, you know, and then, of course, my, you know, it also, when you, things like this happen, you go inside of your deepest reaches of your mind, and you start thinking about things you never thought about before. My background growing up was very strong Catholicism. I went to church more than once a day, you know, every day, and I was active as an altar boy. And so, you know, in my mind, I said, well, maybe it's because I'm living too good a life. You know, maybe I've abandoned my belief system. And so that, I remember that floating in my mind at that time.
Sure. Sure. I can imagine it would. Well, so the doctors went over you after this experience, and they declared you physically fit and sent you off to the shrinks.
Yeah, they... When Carson did come on and the colors were in the room, an important thing did happen at that time that kind of changed my life at another level was that when the colors were dancing and the lights were flashing and the symbol started to appear, eventually, probably after 10 or 15 minutes of this, just watching images floating in the room, a woman appeared, just her head. Elderly woman, school teacher type of woman, somebody I might have had when I was in first or second grade. And the process of the time, which lasted about 7 minutes with her, she began to show me things, and she says, watch this and observe, watch and observe. She would say that over again and over again, and she would show me some headlines, and then she said, so you'll know that this, why this is happening to you, watch and remember. And I took notes down. I mean, I actually got the pad out, and I actually took the notes down.
So you were in a fully conscious state, aware state. You were not in some sort of, what would be the right word, altered state during this?
I may have been, Art. All I know is that I knew everything that was going on.
That's conscious.
As you know, being a technical person yourself, you log things. You keep track of things when it starts, when it stops.
You bet.
What's happening. So the linear me was still running while the non-linear me was experiencing this woman giving me predictions of things that are going to be in the future and telling me two important things that were going to happen that would change my life entirely, and it would also indicate that the world itself was going to change entirely. And those two things were that she said in 1985 there will be a devastating earthquake in Mexico, and that South America and Mexico in particular are key places to watch in the world, especially in the 80s and later in the 90s. And she said that when that happens, there'll be great loss of life near Mexico City from an earthquake. And then in 1989 in San Francisco, there'll be another one. And she says, if these things come to be, then the things that I will show you next will assuredly happen.
Now, isn't that interesting? Even the entity that appeared to you said, if the following happens, then the following is going to occur. That's really interesting. That would indicate that even to that being, there was a sort of a caveat applied to the prophecies you received. Interesting.
It's also something that I found to be true because in the 80s, since my whole technical life had changed, I spent 2 or 3 years not working. I couldn't drive. I couldn't, because visions were happening to me 24 hours a day, and I had other kinds of health crises with headaches and vertigo and imbalanced things, and there was a whole series of problems that I had for 2 years after that experience.
Actually, you still, to some degree, have them. You sound better than I've heard you in a long time tonight in a couple of previous interviews. You were totally whacked out, Gordon. I mean, in the sense that you were tired. I know that it was difficult for you, and I know that the visions you were having literally were putting you into bed.
There was the headaches returned, the same headaches I had between 79 and 82, the crippling headaches returned. Part of it was because I was taxing myself. I was doing way too much, and like you, getting very little sleep, if any, and it catches up with you eventually.
It does,
and
yeah.
Not taking any time off.
Right.
And so by cutting back my schedule, learning to say no, which was very difficult for me to do.
I have a terrible time with it. Terrible time with it. As a matter of fact, I want to ask you something. I know that you went on, I bet with some trepidation, the Roseanne show. The Roseanne show has been pursuing me, and when you went on Roseanne, a lot of people sent me faxes and email and said, man, Gordon was great on Roseanne. And somehow I figured Roseanne would come at you in a very antagonistic way, but she didn't, did she?
No, as you know, we've talked about this before, but the last time I was in California was 1991, And I went out there because my guides told me that these earthquakes were going to happen in Landers and Big Bear. So they gave me the windows that would happen, and it said that this will be set in motion a series of other things that will happen between 98 and 2001. So it was very important for me to go at that time. And I went and I did that, and I had not returned. There's weekly offers to go out there to do various shows. And I've said no, and I said I just have not been back there.
There's a reason you don't go to California.
Part of the reason is that I only had a main reason to go, and that was to give the message, and I did that. And then to go any time thereafter would be of no advantage. I could do the same things where I was. I needed to cut back on my travel. Going up to the West Coast is very difficult. If I was not publishing, you know, if I wasn't publishing a newsletter and writing books, I could find the time. But it really takes me a whole week. I have a very difficult time energy-wise when I get out there.
Gordon, if you let them, they will take your entire life. Hold on, we're at the bottom of the hour. And I have the same problem. I have a really, really hard time saying no. And the number of offers is just absolutely staggering. And the fact of the matter is, if you don't learn to say no, not only do they take your life, but they literally eventually take your life. You'll not live through it. So a person has to learn to say no. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Gordon Michael Scallion's here. Learning to say no, Gordon. Boy, are you right about that, and boy, have I found out about that in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I bet you have.
It's either that, either you learn to say no, or you have a mental crisis, or you have a physical crisis, or you die. It comes down to about that, I think.
Yeah. I went to California, and I agreed to go on to the Roseanne show. I knew it was coming. My guides had told me that I would need to return to California for one day in 1999, and I knew that, you know, 3-4 years ago, and I was just waiting until I got the next piece of instruction.
So you just didn't know why?
I didn't know why. I assumed it was that last time I went, it was to give some warnings before California started getting its first series of quakes. And I assumed that I would be going back for the same reason, that this would be like another level now, a higher level, higher intensity quakes that would occur in 99.
Mm-hmm.
When I found out that Roseanne had asked, I went into a meditative state and asked a series of questions, and the information that I got was that she was a student of metaphysics and was moving on to a new pathway, and so, you know, I remember the old Roseanne show, and I said this can't be wrong. Somehow I've tuned into the wrong channel here.
Absolutely. My first reaction when I heard she wanted me on was, are you kidding?
Yeah, that's exactly what I had said. But
that's the old Roseanne.
Yeah, but I've also learned to trust the information that I have and not to filter it. Once you start filtering, then you're into a different thing. You're no longer you've sold your integrity, and you're not, you know, you have to trust that eventually in time, whatever you're getting has some meaning, and whatever you're being asked to do will have some meaning. So I did go out there. It was a one day thing. Exactly as I was told. I went out for one day. She was supposed to have 6 guests on the show that day.
Mm-hmm.
She cleared all the guests off, and I was the only guest. And so that was interesting.
It came off very well. I got nothing but real raves and compliments about it. So that show really came off well.
It turned out to be a good show. She was, as it turns out, she is. She even teaches classes dealing with spiritual belief systems. She does it a couple times a week. And so I had a chance to chat with her about some of her out-of-body experiences in her life,
mm-hmm.
and the new path that she's on. And it, just as my guides had said, she was really on a new path. I assumed that this show was because of what's coming up in 99. And it was right. to go to California and set that message. And it did. From that message there, various pieces of that show have been picked up and rebroadcast in different forms. And so people are listening now. And you got to remember, when I went out in 91, there was really nothing going on in California. I mean, there was a quake in 89, but California was quiet. The world was fairly quiet. We weren't having the incredible disasters that we're having now. So this is a much different time going out in 99 versus going out in 91.
Well, I'm just a lay observer with regard to the weather, but it's obvious there is a profound change underway. Now, the only question I have as a casual observer is this change we're in short and cyclical or long and profound and serious? What are we into? More tornadoes? You were right about that. You called that one on the money. And violent weather all over the place. Now, what are we in for? Where are we going with this? Is it going to get better or worse?
We're actually, this is part of a cycle. El Nino is a cycle, but it's forced scientists to rethink cycles. It's forced them to look at things much differently because they were much longer, much more intense than they ever had been before. And it seems like we've been in this cycle for years now. And what we're seeing is each year we're seeing an increase in the amount of weather-related destruction. In December of last year, for my predictions for 99, the key things that I saw, at least for the United States, was record numbers of tornadoes,
right,
and floods that far exceeded the floods that I had predicted for 93, the Mississippi,
right,
floods,
right,
far beyond that. And so we're going to see this year weather-related issues, massive floods, and the tornadoes are going to continue.
What's happening to us, Gordon?
The trigger for all of this, I believe, is can be found in the core of the Earth. I address it pretty thoroughly in my book, Notes on the Cosmos, where I talk about how the core of the Earth has shifted its position ever so slightly. But that set into motion a lot of changes that's forcing magma to change its directions, and it's literally outputting more heat, if you will, or allowing more heat to exit through the various layers. Since the Earth is predominantly water, it makes sense logically to me that heat is going to end up in the oceans.
So this is energy coming from within.
Coming within. And I believe that this is the true cause of El Nino. I believe that the winds and the current scientific theory only drives those. It only drives it, but the source of it, the initial source, is coming from within the Earth. Now, coupled to that is something that both you and I know from our ham radio experience, is that the sun also goes through a cycle of approximately 22 years. We know it as the 11-year sunspot cycle.
Yes.
And we're coming up to cycles of 23, I believe.
As a matter of fact, Gordon, 48 hours ago, for the first time in the ascension portion of 23, we hit a solar flux index of over 200.
Yeah, that was another prediction that I had made in my book, and also had said later last year, I said it in my predictions for 99, was that things to watch for was that we would start to have massive amounts of solar emissions. Now, that in turn feeds back to the Earth and causes more heat to come out of the Earth as well. So it's like a symbiotic relationship that's dancing back and forth. All of this is caused by the precession of the equinoxes, or the cycle of our Earth's rotation in the sun system as we go through the ages of, most people are familiar with the astrological ages of Aquarius and Pisces and so forth. That grand cycle is approximately 26,000 years. And at the extremes of that cycle, approximately 13,000 years, there's massive devastation on the Earth. The last one we had was approximately 12,500 years ago, where we had all the weather changes in the planet. It was global. That's where they found the thousands upon thousands of animals frozen in Russia and Stride. And
the 13,000-year mark, is that a precise mark, Gordon? Or
I don't think it's as precise as some of the people who follow this and believe in this concept. I think from a geological or even an astronomical point of view, it's relatively accurate. But accurate to within, you know, 100 years, 50 years, I don't know. But I know that they've done core samples.
Yes.
And through those core samples, they're able to date times that the Earth's magnetic field has changed its positions. Now, that's something that, you know, in our lifetimes we haven't experienced, but through cores, we can see that there's a cycle there. And that cycle seems to be running about 12 to 13,000 years.
Well, the recent research that I've heard about all of this, Gordon, seems to indicate now that these changes, they originally thought occurred over very long periods of time. Now they're beginning to say, well, you know what? Maybe according to the core samples, the changes occurred quite rapidly.
The information that that I follow, you know, at least the scientific papers that come across my desk and are mailed to me, and a lot of these are by people who are with JPL or NASA. There's a very large scientific body who send me things very quietly, some anonymously, and some actually put their names on it.
Right.
And they tell me that, you know, when I started doing predictions, even in the early 80s, it was thought to be, like you said, maybe over 150 years time period that this thing could have happened.
Right.
Because of our technology today and our more accurate way of dating, we went from 150 years to maybe 50 years to maybe 10 years, and now they think they've got it down. They definitely have it down to the actual month and probably the week in the month that it happened.
Wow.
They're able to do this by digging up some of the mastodons that were frozen in stride, and they still had buttercups in their mouths. They were still digesting food. And by looking at the flowers, they could tell what time of the year it was. They knew exactly what time of the year it was. So the same flowers are growing today in the same area. So they know... they know that part of it. Now, the next part of it was how to get it down. So they're down now to less than 10 years when it could have happened, and they're probably thinking this thing could have happened within months. Eventually, it'll be known that this thing happened literally in days.
In days, my God. Days. Well, you know, some thousands or hundreds of thousands of years from now, whenever it is they look back at us, with the amount of preservatives that we put in food right now, they'll be able to look into the mouths of woolly human beings, and it'll be very well preserved, whatever it is. So, anyway, so the changes that we are now in, that we're experiencing right now, I mean, I could open up the phone lines and take report after report from Canada to Mexico and all the way across, and everybody would say, something is wrong with the weather. I mean, really wrong with the weather. And so, obviously, we want to know where it goes from here and how fast the current cycle of changes will put us into a strange position or worrisome.
The last year, as you know, the last time I was on your show, I think it was July of last year.
Right.
I had said that I really felt that there were great changes coming up by November, weather-wise. And that it wouldn't surprise me if we had some massive solar flares, and that if the, and also I felt that the temperature of the planet had just increased, and we probably were going to break a record. So last year we did break a temperature record. Now I expect that that's going to happen again. Doesn't make sense. The scientific community is saying no. The reason that I think that the weather changes are just beginning, not trailing off as being reported, is because we have now have another cycle adding to our own Earth core shift, and that's the solar flare cycle that we're into now. And these flares are going to be much higher. They already are higher, and the magnitude is such that it's going to cause shifts in the jet stream. So we're going to see incredible amounts of moisture that's going to come to the deserts of the United States, you know, California,
Nevada.
In Nevada, you're going to see that. Arizona, massive amounts of water is going to be dumped there. Also, Mississippi again, down in Missouri, throughout the southern states. So we're going to see all that water, as that jet stream changes and the currents are, that are driving and change, as flares continue to occur, if many of these regions happen to be pointed in the right direction, or perhaps it's the wrong direction, and the Earth takes some major hits, these hits are going to not only disrupt electrical, I mean, everybody's worried about Y2K.
The grid.
But the grid is what we really should be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see happening. So, you know, in the United States, tornadoes, hailstorms, I mean, there'll be hailstorms the size of softballs. I mean, massive amounts of damage from hail. And then the winds that will pick up, not only tornadoes, but just very strong gusts of winds. We're going to see
right.
winds that are going to hit hurricane velocity.
Gee whiz, you're now talking to the proud new owner of a 100-foot steel tower above his head. Winds, huh?
Yeah, but I'm sure you put it up so it's good for at least 150 miles an hour.
I did.
So you're
I did, indeed. But I'm a little concerned. Now, I kind of know where you're going here. As we, I know a little bit about this, Gordon. As we get hit with flares or ejecta from the sun, we are ostensibly protected by our magnetic field. But there have been disturbing reports of fluctuations in the magnetic field lately, and I've had some people say we could get hit with such a big one that it would that the Earth's magnetic field would somehow not quite protect us from it, and the results of that would be quite catastrophic.
It could be the trigger for a magnetic pole shift. In fact,
exactly.
My visions have indicated that that's exactly what will happen. Not necessarily this year, though it may begin in some small level this year. When those flares hit, and the magnetosphere just bulges out, and when it couples into the Earth, and we get what you know we know as auroras, aurora borealis.
Yes.
When we couple that kind of energy in. It creates not only disturbances electrically at the poles, but that same disturbance becomes part of the electrical system of the Earth and the magnetic field of the Earth. Now, one thing that is going on now and has been going on for some time is that the strength of the Earth's magnetic field has been declining, and it's been declining steadily.
That's what I've heard.
Now, we know in the past, due to these core sample tests that they took all around the world, they knew that just before the poles shifted their position, the magnetic poles now,
mm-hmm.
shifted their position, that the magnetic field dropped. And so we're in that cycle as well. So this is just like another thing that we can look at to say what kind of things are really going on that may have some past credibility. We study the past scientifically so that we can then
predict
extrapolate
the
for the future.
Sure.
And so I believe that we're going to have some whopper flares. And before the Y2K hits, the flares will have already hit.
If there should be a virtual cessation for a period of time of the Earth's magnetic field, which could occur and many people are saying may, and we were to get hit by a large flare, That would do the trick, wouldn't it? In other words,
it could be. A way of looking at it is, remember those little Scotty dogs, one black, one white magnets that you used to put on your refrigerator?
Absolutely.
And if you took the two Scotty dogs and you pushed them together, they repelled each other, and if you turned it around, they would attract each other. They're standard magnets that you play with.
Sure.
And it's a really good experiment for people to do, to go in some kind of a hobby shop or a Radio Shack or someplace and pick up some magnets and just kind of play with them. And because when you have it in your hand and you see what it does, you then can have an understanding that the Earth is just this big, huge magnet. And as a result of that, you can clearly see that there's a point where if it's not in balance or in harmony, then it's susceptible to shifting. And that flare, when it does occur, I believe will be the trigger, and it will flip the magnetic field. I don't see a complete reversal. I describe it in some detail, again, in my book, but basically what I say is that I see the magnetic field shifting towards the west. Not all magnetic shifts, pole shifts, have been 180 degrees. that have been in various amounts. The ones that I see go in 6 or 7 to 12 o'clock. It moves to the west 7 degrees, 6 to 7 degrees, three different times before it stabilizes itself.
Oh, my, Gordon. We've had that occur already. Hold on. We're at the top of the hour, and you've got a good break here. We've had really a strange series of reports of sudden fluctuations of the magnetic north to the west by 6 and 7 degrees on this program. We've had that several times. I'm Art Bell, Gordon Michael Scallion. We'll be right back. Sid, interrupt yourself. I'll probably lose my voice. Breaking news on the Miami Circle. Miami-Dade County, Dateline, the mayor there wants to file an eminent domain lawsuit immediately to stop the construction over the Miami Circle. If you want to know more, it's on my website right now, along with the Miami Circle webcam, the Miami photo page, and all kinds of links about the Miami Circle. It looks like they're going to exercise the a little used eminent domain. That's quite a flash of news for you. We will keep you updated. Once again, Gordon Michael Scallion. Gordon, if we went through a shift, a partial shift, the kind you described a little while ago, what would happen to us?
Even a permanent shift of a few degrees would be catastrophic. What happens is that immediately we shift all the elements of the Earth. It would create the steering winds of the planet would shift very abruptly. If it was 7 degrees, like I see happen three times, or a total of 20 some degrees. That would be significant enough so that the weather of the entire planet would change, and it would happen almost instantly. The first thing that would happen is that the shift would occur. Obviously, electrical devices are going to have, the grid is going to have a problem, especially if it was triggered by a solar flare. That was the cause of it.
Right.
Immediately, high and low pressure points of the planet change, and winds would start probably within minutes and build in force. And so we would see winds 200-400 miles an hour that would move at different places on the planet. The other thing that...
Gordon, I've seen typhoons hit South Pacific Islands and Pacific Islands. I lived on one, and they build flat concrete houses because of the winds. A 300 or 400 mile an hour wind, Gordon, would... Well, I've seen typhoons actually flatten islands completely and take every structure off. Poof, gone, like it doesn't exist. 300 to 400 miles an hour, there wouldn't be anything left.
Even more difficult is since our planet is a majority of water, we're going to see water being pushed everywhere. So water movement would be incredible. We would see tsunamis that could reach Empire State Building kind of heights and beyond. Somewhere that energy has got to be dissipated. If we look at it as an energy being released, mm-hmm. It's like the magnetic shift is lots of nuclear bombs, and that energy is going to spread out, and it's going to dissipate until its energy has expended itself. And it only expends itself by moving to different portions. So it's the planet itself is always trying to seek a balance. And the most probable scenario would be is that such a shift, of course, is going to move the plate tectonic system of the planet. So then you're going to have that energy moving. We today scientifically do not know what creates the magnetic field in the Earth.
That's true. You're right. We don't know.
It's one of those mysteries, and you go back and look at textbooks of things you learned in college, and it just isn't true. I mean, these are theories, and there's two or three different theories that are out there. I've shared my theory in my book of what I think it is, and that's that the Earth itself has boundaries or layers. And it's almost like a solid state device. It's the only way I could describe it. And it's these boundaries that indeed create it, and it creates it as a result of an electrical connection between the sun and the Earth.
In other words,
not its rotation. I don't believe the rotation is actually creating the field.
In other words, as we go around the sun, the Earth is sort of like a motor. You could think of it like a motor, and there is energy generated within the Earth itself as a matter of this rotation. Is that fair?
I think in part it's fair. Yes, the sun, because of its mass and its dynamics, you know, it has poles too, and it's going through its own pole shift. I think currently right now.
You bet.
And that energy, you know, comes to the Earth. Now we're more familiar with it as sunlight, you know, and so we see that, and we may know a little bit about cosmic rays and things of this nature, but what is not understood is that the Earth receives that energy and then it sends it back. It's sinusoidal in form. It's a wave that comes to the Earth and goes back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only heat and light, it's gravity and magnetism and color and sound. I mean, there's seven layers or bands or rays that's exchanging between the sun and the Earth. So anything that goes on in the sun is going to go on in the Earth.
Makes sense. What do you know, or what can you tell us about what you believe to be the makeup of the inner Earth itself? There's much argument about that, and we've talked about it before, but it bears touching on. In other words, what really is down going toward the core of the Earth? Can you draw a picture of that?
Again, it's one of those things that that scientifically we do not know.
Right. That's right.
And so the only thing that we do know is you know, there's a lot of research being done by sending various waves to the Earth, and by doing that, we know some things. So we can speculate that the Earth core moves at a different speed, which is one of the predictions I had made years ago that just was proven out last year, that it moves at a different speed than the outer crust.
I remember that prediction.
What I see, and again, what I describe in my book, is that there's an incredible amount of heat, you know, that's generated. I mean, the heat is hot enough to melt rock. But, you know, in my visions and through the discussions with my guides, as we get closer to the core of the Earth, some theories are that it's a solid
iron core.
Iron core, and that's what gives us our magnetism. That's not what I see at all. What I see is a plasma. It's like this energy, and it's only I can describe it as an energy, but it's and the word that my guide said is it's a plasma. It's under incredible pressure from the heat, because heat wants to escape out of the thing. The Earth is cooling. It's slowly cooling, very slowly cooling, but it gets rejuvenated because of the sun's energy that comes to us. So it's constantly being rejuvenated, but over billions of years, we could say the Earth is slowly cooling, and the outer crust is more solid than the inner crust. If your question was, is there a hollow core Earth theory, is that true? Not by my visions.
So you envision a plasma at the center.
A plasma at the center. A high-intensity plasma. And that as you move out from the center core of the Earth, we have these layers. Scientifically, I think they've identified what they believe to be 5, 6, or 7. I see 7 of these main layers, but I see 49 total layers as I go from the core out. And each of these layers has a different polarity. So it's like a series of magnets, north, south, north, south, north, north, south, and so forth.
Engine.
An engine.
Virtually a generator.
Yeah.
Actually, a generator, really. And, of course, engines are generators, or motors are generators. I should have said motor, really. And that's what we are, is a giant kind of motor, I guess. I remember you saying that you thought there had been a shift of magma or plasma. I'm not sure which. I'll ask you now. That shift had occurred or was going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a very tiny shift with giant results for us, or what?
The shift, I believe, was significant. One of the longstanding predictions for cataclysmic events on the Earth that Casey published was that that when certain volcanoes became active, and he talked about Italy becoming active, and he also talked about Pele very specifically, and Martinique.
Pele, yes.
Talked about those. So he says if either of those become active, then mega Earth changes would occur, and then he said something to the effect that somehow they were in harmony together. He passed over in 1945, so we didn't have the ability to go back and ask him what he meant or if he could update that. Because since he said that, there has been activity in Italy, of course, many times. During the war, there was significant activity such that they bombed the volcano to keep the smoke out so the bombers could get to their missions. What I see is an actual passageway, if you will, or conduit that goes between South America, the Caribbean, it's like a Y there, and all the way under the Atlantic Ocean, and then up where Italy is, in particular Etna and Vesuvius. So if you can see like an underground river of magma flowing between those two places, and my prediction was that I think things had changed since Casey's time, and I felt that if there was ever any significant activity in the Caribbean, so, and at the same time that there was activity at Etna, if they both simultaneously became active, very active, then that was kind of a key to me that that prediction about the underground magma connection was true and that we were getting real close. And, of course, that now has happened. It happened in January.
That's correct. That's correct. And the moment it occurred, I got a million faxes and emails saying, remember what Gordon said.
Yeah. I don't think Pele will be active. I think it shifted to a different area. I mean, that whole area was is volcanic, and it took the weakest place. And, of course, we know what happened to in the Caribbean. They had to evacuate the island.
That's correct.
And so those things are going now. Now so that was, in geological times, it was very fast. This shift, I believe, began in the 30s, and by 87, I believe it was really took a big jolt, and then I believe it took another jolt in 92, and then I think it took a final jolt in 97. July of 97 is when I woke up one morning and I knew that something had broken through, that more heat was moving, and that the magnetic field was getting real close to a shift.
Now, when you have visions, I thought you described them so well once on the program as three television screens, two being sort of black and white or weak color, and one being very contrasty and brighter and more likely than the other. Any of the scenarios were possible, but increasingly this one screen would be more dominant. And the obvious future that we were going to have, kind of like three little movies running on three screens, but one of them becoming more and more clear and bright and likely. Is that fair?
I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly as I see it. Usually before I see those three screens, I start having a series of dreams. Each night I have at least five or six that I can recall. And then in the morning when I get up, I take notes about the ones that I realize that are just about my life or my health, what I need to be doing, and ones that relate to the Earth, and that things that I need to pay attention to. And if I don't pay attention, the dream will repeat itself until I finally do. Now, once I say, okay, there's something here, then I'll see these three images. It's like going to an electronics TV showroom where they have all these TVs playing, except that there are three of them. And I can look at it one day, and then I can go back a month later and call up that same image. Once I see the image, it's like a database. It's locked in there. I can always recall it instantly.
What information do you actually get? Do you get do you see the disasters as if from space here on Earth? Do you? And how does the information appear to you?
It has various ways. In the beginning, it was from space, looking back. And then seeing it as a distance, so I get the overall picture. And then future visions would show me a little closer. I might be 100 miles instead of, you know, 10,000 miles out. So that would be like the first go round. And then later, when I started seeing these movies, it would just depend on how much time I wanted to spend. If I stay in it too long, the headaches come, mm-hmm. and then I lose everything, and then I'm usually in bed for a day or two. So I've had to learn how to pace myself. So when these visions start, I very quickly look for key things. Sometimes the visions move very fast. It's like watching a movie that's running at high speed. And then I look for elements, like the place on the planet it might be, the time of the season, you know, the leaves on the trees. Is it a warm climate? Is it a cold climate? Sometimes I'll even see a newspaper, and that's what happened with Northridge. I knew, you know, I saw the newspaper, I saw the month of the newspaper, and I knew the month and the year it would happen. On rare occasions, the newspaper will stay for a second or two, and I can actually get the actual day. That's a rarity. Usually I get the month, and I can see the year and the month of it. And some of the predictions that I published this year, I received in 83, so I had to wait all these years for these things to unfold. Hmm. Sometimes they change. It's like the three images. I can look at the image, see these three screens, and say, wow, it looks like this is really going to happen. I can go back a year or two later, look at the same three screens, and they may change. The one that looked most probable, the bright colored one, may now be a muted color, and the middle screen, which would have been weaker, may be stronger.
Again, there's this malleable aspect of prophecy or visions, whether you get them or whether a being is giving them to you. It seems to have sort of the same caveat each time. What's your speculation, Gordon, about what makes it so elastic, the very nature of it? In other words, what forces are at work here that might make one thing come true and forestall another?
I think a good example would be to share of in the 80s, when I was trying to find some value to all this craziness that was happening to me, someone showed up at my doorstep one day and said that he was sent to see me, and nobody knew me. I mean, I was in hibernation, hiding, because I didn't want these vision demons to get me. Anyways, the person came in and just knew things about me that no one knew, because I didn't tell anybody what I was going through. It was just a handful of people, if that, at the time. And he came and asked me to help him with a medical problem. And through the process of an hour or two, with him urging me, I found that's when the images would show, these screens would show. And I would say, well, I'm seeing these three screens, and if you do this, maybe the screens will change.
All right, Gordon, hold it right there. We'll pick up on the stranger at your doorstep when we get back. Gordon Michael Scallion is here. I'm Art Bell, and we will be right back. Again, and a stranger showed up at your door.
And through a series of proddings by him, I was able to, for the very first time, see images of a person, and able to look at these three different screens I was seeing, and was able to say to him that if you do these things, you know, maybe this image will change. Because by that time I had seen hundreds of these triple screens, but I had never had one in such a case where I was able to do it on the spot. And the person came back in about 3 months, and when I saw the person, the screens immediately appeared, as they do, and I could see that it had changed. So I learned from this that predictions that deal with individuals are much easier to do than dealing with something that requires a lot of changes. For example, the Earth itself, you know, there are 5 billion inhabitants, and that's a lot of sporadic energy that's flowing throughout the planet.
Yes, it is.
And so I think that the three screens of looking at an individual is not much different than looking at three screens for the Earth. The difference becomes is what people do. We're a significant number of people now. Since the Earth is magnetic, electromagnetic, we are too. It makes total sense to me logically that we couple with the Earth, you know, and that there's an exchange that goes on.
Kind of like Native Americans believe, really, that we are part of the Earth.
I have everything that I have ever experienced or done just confirms that over and over again. And so predictions on an individual, there's free will. You can say, you know, if you stop doing this, you will heal faster. And then if somebody's willing to do that, then indeed the healing can happen quicker. What I was seeing in the 80s and what this woman was telling me about the predictions for the turn of the century was that by 87, the Earth had to really turn around. The people on the Earth had to turn around. And we had to stop doing a couple of things that were very important. Because she had told me that there were going to be these solar flares and magnetic shifts. And at the time, I didn't understand what those really were. I knew what a sunspot was, but I didn't understand what she was referring to by magnetic pole shifts. I didn't even know they existed. But she said 87 was the cutoff year. And she said that we needed to stop doing underground nuclear detonations, and we also had to stop using super secret weapons that we were developing, weather control weapons that were being developed, she said, by three countries that were in operation. So back in the 80s, these things were already underway. And she said those are the things that will cause the acceleration of these changes. If we stop using those and kind of move towards a spiritual point in the planet, that the changes, while they still will happen, would be less severe. Mm-hmm. That we would not, as a collective body, add to these changes. That they would, it would be a point that we would somehow move through them in a better way. We'd be better prepared for that. So 87 came and went, and by 88 and 89, I had been told that we indeed hadn't. We were still doing those things. We were still, in fact, that in the 90s there were going to be, you know, space projects that would be super secret that would be doing very similar things that they were doing with ground-based antennas, and that had been instituted and that they would be active in the 90s. I don't know if that's true because so much of this stuff is classified, but I can make the assumption based on what we're already doing technically that we have the capability of doing just about anything you can imagine now.
We just had, by the way, a coronal mass ejection from the sun yesterday, an M-class flare, and they are predicting severe degradation of HF propagation. And in other words, we're about to get hit with another magnetic storm. They've been coming almost one after another after another.
Yeah, I called them. I said it'll be the freight train syndrome.
That's
1958 and 57, 58, 59 were the IGY years. That was the years that we did a lot of research on that sunspot cycle back then. And it was very high. The count was very high. I felt that the count this cycle would far exceed that, that we needed to look at counts that might hit 300, 400, or 500, not 150 or 200 as we recently experienced. We're going to see really high counts.
That's unthinkable.
Okay. Yes, it is.
I can remember once in all my, and I watched it like a hawk because I'm a ham. I remember it hit 300 once, but 500 is unimaginable.
We will see that this year.
What?
This year we will see... We will see numbers that will reach 500. The emissions are going to be building. Warning signs for this to happen will come probably 6 to 10 days, somewhere in that range beforehand, and that is electrical sensations on your physical body.
You'll actually feel it?
You're going to feel a reaction because when there is an eruption or when there's a flare in the physical world, I call it the superatomic level. These are levels that we haven't even explored yet scientifically. It already happens. So in other words, there's already an effect on the Earth prior And that's why prior to an earthquake, for example, a lot of people are sensitive. They feel nauseous or certain parts of their bodies will react.
That's right.
In my particular case, I started having dreams about a month before. I may, 2 or 3 years out, I may know that a significant quake is going to hit a certain area. But about a month before I start having dreams, my body starts reacting, and other people as well. They start feeling these things. So we're going to see a lot of this electrical sensation. We're going to see a lot more brain tumors, unprecedented year for brain tumors, heart failures, people who have pacers. It's just going to be a lot of electrical. This is an electrical year, literally.
Fascinating. Fascinating. God. What about, you remember when you were on, and everybody who heard you recalls this, you talked about the mega earth changes that would begin when those two volcanoes became active.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about many times a cycle of earthquakes that would occur around the Ring of Fire. And a lot of people misunderstood and said, see, it didn't happen. But what, in fact, the cycle never did complete that you said would have to complete before the mega earth changes would begin. Have you had another look at that, or do you have any idea where we are?
In the over 7 range. So we had the last one that we had it, except the fourth one went down to a 5.
That's correct.
And so we had the 7, 7, then we had a 5, and so that did not fulfill the prediction. And so we counted that as a miss, even though we had the cycle and the timing. Because
it was so close. I was watching it. I remember thinking, oh, God, I watched each one of those earthquakes in the 7 level, and I said, here it comes. And then at the last minute, as you point out, a lesser earthquake, and everything changed.
And it just does it. The reason that the scenario happened is due to this magma flow that we talked about earlier, this interconnection that I see in the Earth between boundaries and between certain vents. I mean, the heat wants to get out of the planets, so it's going to do it at the thinnest places, which is the oceans. So most of the stuff that's going on, we're not even aware of. I mean, probably better than 90% of the volcanoes are under sea.
You know, I've talked to geologists, Gordon, and I've told them what I think. And I, you know, it's obvious that volcanoes get active at the same time. And I've asked geologists and volcanologists whether they think there's a possible connection between these and the Earth. And they say, hell no. And yet, the synchronicity of them going off at the same time would seem to suggest there's some connection.
Well, it's like so much, you know, in the scientific community, and I'm kind of a sub-member of it. I was more heavily into it than I am now, because now I'm more open to things. But, you know, when a theory gets established, you know, like the dynamo theory of magnetism for the Earth, for example, which is not proven, this becomes like gospel. Or when cataclysm is thought to occur over thousands or millions of years, you know, that's a theory. And then these theories slowly break down as new theories replace them.
Mm-hmm.
So many people in the scientific community are coming from what they've learned, and there's a certain rigidity to it until a new discipline replaces it. And even when that new discipline comes out on the surface, it's attacked. And it may take years before it's established as a
correct.
New theory.
That's correct.
I really enjoy doing seminars for high school students and elementary. I really like that a lot because they're so open. And logically, you can just see where their minds go. They just say, well, if there's all this heat in the Earth, it's got to go out someplace.
Right.
And therefore, if it's going out, it's you know, there's got to be some timing to this. And we can look at the timing, and we can see that, indeed, there is connections, and they're becoming more obvious. There are cycles to it, and there are triggers to it.
I interview a lot of new age type people, and they have, frankly, a lot of the same kind of information that you have, but they present it in a very different way, Gordon. They tend never to look at the negative aspects. They know the changes are coming, but they will come on the air and say things like, it will be wonderful. There will be a sort of a new awareness for us all. We will grow. Of course, they don't mention that a substantial portion of the Earth's population will not make it across the threshold of change. In other words, a whole lot of people are going to die. They never tell you that. They just say, well, you know, it's going to be wonderful.
It's you know, being happy or sad or something being wonderful or terror exists every day of our lives. You know, if we have a fear of going out at night and we're forced to go out at night, you know, that's a very real fear. Or if we have a fear of cancer, all of these emotions we all feel. A lot of intuitives who get information choose to look at the positive side of it, and for them it is a correct thing. I believe anything is correct if the information enables you to grow somehow. Somehow you're able to use that information. In my case, I decided long ago that I couldn't candy coat what I was doing. I couldn't manipulate it. It just didn't go well with me, that I simply had to just put it out the way it was. And I do see a lot of very positive things happening, especially in medical technology.
Oh, yes.
I see some wonderful things after the turn of the century. But I'm also a realist, and I also see that regardless of any form of prophetic information, we just have to look at what's the reality of the world right now. We just have to see what things really are. There are these very measurable changes that are going on the Earth, temperature-wise, weather-wise. Every imaginable thing on the planet is being challenged now. It's like this is like a culmination year of all of the challenges that we could think about. And how we work with these changes can make us better people, or we can fall away. If somehow the information that we're talking about tonight gets people to get into self-sufficiency, rethinking their lives, and none of it ever happens, are they any worse off for it?
No.
And I think not. I think it's because it gives you an opportunity to look at conservation, to look at recycling, little things you can do. Things are not hopeless, but the changes that I see are monumental. There will be places on the earth that will do better than others. All of us will be challenged. The positive things that we can talk about is that it may force us all to come together in a kind of a spiritual light that maybe otherwise we wouldn't have. World War II did that, for example. It was a terrible event. The atrocities were unbelievable. Those same atrocities are going on, still going on in the world today. Yet, you know, we all have these choices and options now of how we participate in these things and how we can give our voice to say this is something we don't want. The internet has given us a great voice. It's very difficult now to do anything without the focus immediately being broadcast worldwide. These are good things that I see happening.
All right, Gordon. Here's a really good question. How much of human activity bears on what's going to happen? In other words, is human activity a tiny little factor that doesn't even bear on what lies ahead in terms of Earth changes, or is human activity a gigantic factor in that, do you think?
Depending on where it is in the cycle, it can be a gigantic thing. It was a gigantic potential back in the 80s when you have these choices that if you do something a certain way, certain things will happen. If you do it another way, it takes another path. And so we had those kind of pathways in the 80s. It would have taken perhaps 3, 4, 5% of the world's population in the 80s attuned to a particular, I'll just call it a tone or a vibration, could have brought about great changes, because those people in the right places could have brought about change. And every so often we'll see a great politician, a great poet, someone will come and it will bring about great change, so that one individual can make a great change. As we get into the cycle, however, where things are starting to go awry, such as the Earth now is wobbling erratically, now it's going to take a lot more people to bring about a change. And can we do it? You know, I'm an optimist in the sense that I think that even at the 11th hour, all things are possible. I now believe, however, that all things are possible in more localized areas. I think we have a better chance in communities now to bring about change. But on a global basis, I think we've passed the fail-safe time.
Point of no return.
Yep.
The map that you have, I have this wonderful full-size map, your Earth Changes map. And I've got it in a very prominent place on the wall, and everybody who goes by it stops cold and starts looking and says things like, God, I don't seem to be here anymore. In other words, the world on your map is a very, very, very different place in almost every respect. Hardly anything remains unchanged. Is that still, as far as you know, an accurate representation of what it will be?
It is, and it's probably, as we get closer to my 1998 to 2001 window where the mega stuff begins, it's probably more accurate now because we're closer, and all of the last warnings were, the last warnings I had of my scenario in my book, I give all the warning signs, and the very last warning sign was the simultaneous activity in Italy and in the Caribbean. And so that hasn't been met. I believe that will occur. I mean, the reason that I created the map was so that it was a quick graphic image. And because of that graphic image, I also gave things that would happen first. These things don't all happen in 1 hour. It's more like a series of jolts that happen. Things begin in the Western United States first, then Japan. It goes back to South America, then the United States again. So, and these things occur over a period of days, weeks, months. At this stage, I don't know. But I just know that there's a series of events that occur. So if the first events occur, and you look at the map and say, well, there it is. And so that just gives us a little benchmark to say, well, okay, if the first one occurred this way, maybe the second one.
And in your view, we're already in that process.
We have begun it.
All right. Hold it right there, Gordon. It's a good long break, and we'll be back, and we'll get as specific as we can. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest from the high desert. This is Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch that dial. And get the white LED. Oh, it's made ABS. Michael Scallion. Gordon, I think if we can, you mentioned to me something earlier about Turkey. Before we began the show, you mentioned Turkey, and maybe you'd like to say a couple of words about that.
One of my long-standing predictions was the next major war that we would see, and depending on the belief system, some people refer to it as Armageddon, or the Antichrist, or World War III. The next one that I saw also began between 98 and 2001, and I saw the event starting in Turkey due to a major unrest in Turkey, a political internal issue that became over more like property or property rights was one of the issues, but it then developed into religious indifferences. And that Italy and Yugoslavia would be pivotal. So Turkey, Yugoslavia, and Italy were areas that my predictions back in first time I published it globally was in 92. So to watch for that. And then in December of 98, when I published my predictions for 99, I felt fairly confident since I was only seeing one of those TV screens. The other two were totally gone. It was only a single one, that 99 was going to be the year, and that there would be some kind of a trigger that would occur due to, as I said, something to do with a political unrest in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, in the past 24 hours has really escalated. There's been a global alert dealing with with that part of the world.
My God, Europe's coming apart. They've captured this man, and Europe is literally coming apart. What's going on?
It's the culmination. It's the same energies that drive the Earth into its higher. I call it a higher vibration. It's like everything in our lives are speeding up. It's like in the 80s, the train pulled out of the terminal, and it started to build up speed. And we can see this in our lives. We can see this, the internet, for example,
yes.
Satellite communications, multiple channels, everything is faster and faster and faster.
Yes.
That same energy that's driving that is also driving things that that have been sore issues for a long time, the Palestinian issue, the Kurdish issue. These issues are now being fractured. So things that aren't in harmony get a chance to go into harmony, or they erupt. And it's a polarization of the planet that I see occurring. And so we're going to now see this polarization is going to take hold, and war will break out. And it will break out this year sometime. It'll start this year, and it'll just accelerate it. And eventually it will engulf all of the Middle East. It'll engulf most of Europe. And it won't come directly to North America, but we certainly will be feeling the effects, and there will be some terrorist attempts in this country and probably some successes.
And that will begin this year?
I believe it's just begun. If we were to look back, let's say we went ahead 5 years in time, and we would look back and we said, you know, when did this thing really begin? And we would say, well, it really began in February of 99. But the actual fighting, in many senses, it's already begun.
Well, we're ready to send troops to Kosovo, as you know.
Yeah, there's no way that there's going to be a peace agreement that's going to come out of that part of the world.
Well, we're apparently going to send troops either way.
It's an inevitable thing that it has to go that direction.
Mm.
There's too many lessons that were learned, not only in the very physical reality world of memory, but also psychically and spiritually. There's lessons that were learned from World War II. And so these things are now, it's like a repeat of a cycle. And now, you know, even though we don't want to see the U.S. as the policeman, this is a NATO operation that I see happening, and we will just be one of many players. This will not be like it was in the 90s when we went to Africa and brought over 500,000 troops. It won't be like that at all. But we will take an active role. We're going to see massive amounts of sorties being flown by our stealth technology. I mean, that's inevitable. That will happen.
Hmm. And I suppose nations without the ability to retaliate with stealth technology will retaliate with little people with suitcases and vials.
It's been the trend, biological and atomic. I mean, these things will be the weapons of our near future.
We are, as you know, you pointed it out, a really technical society now. And we have this looming Y2K thing. I would be in error indeed if I didn't ask you if you know or feel anything about Y2K.
I've received quite a bit of information about Y2K, and you might also remind me later about Miami, too. That's something that just came in today, so I can talk about that later.
Oh, I very much want to ask you about
that. Just remind me, make a note of that, because I'll forget for sure.
All right.
The Y2K is not a question of if it's going to happen, the question, or even when. It will happen. The question is, what is the severity of it? I don't see it as severe as many people do. If it hits you, it's obviously very severe. The third world countries, I think, will be very hard hit by this, extremely so. And the reason is that what do we do with our old technology?
We usually send it abroad.
Right. And so a lot of the power stations, a lot of the power equipment, and that's the thing that I'm most concerned with, is that we're going to see, that there's a cycle this year where... and I believe it'll be the latter months, November, December of this year, where we're going to see a major global economic downturn, major one. I mean, just unbelievable one. I'm not sure what causes it, but I have a sense
it's
a combination of things that go on. And part of that, I think, is that just the fear of Y2K is going to drive
yes.
a lot of markets in ways that will cause crippling and shutdown and actual massive liquidations and devaluations. So I think we're going to see that, and that may be the trigger. Here in the States, I see more problems with solar flares in the power grid than I do with Y2K. They're both serious. And here, when things go down, there'll be more with commerce than anything else. We're going to see, you know, the power plants, I don't think, from Y2K are going to necessarily fail in mass. More isolated
regional
things, more computer centers.
Yep.
That think they've got it solved. There's going to be a lot of patching. You know, come you know, Christmas of this year, programmers are going to be patching everywhere. You know, just reset clocks, do whatever you can to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be failures.
What concerns me more than the possibility, and there will be some, I'm sure, as you point out, but the human element, there have been so many stories lately, and I bet you've got them too, indicating that even if a small portion of the people who are indicating by poll that they will go to the bank and withdraw money do so, there is not even close to enough money. And that would precipitate a terrible, terrible financial crisis.
Well, you know, those stories have already been published, of course, and
yes.
So that's out there in the consciousness. And
yes.
So what happens when things like that start, there are those who begin early, you know, start doing it now. So they start their own little program and say, I'm not going to wait. But as is the habit with human nature is that we tend to do things at the last minute. So we can expect that come December, we're going to see a lot of that. But I'm willing to bet you that it's going to start in September.
I agree. In other words, people are going to know there's going to be a last-minute panic. They're not going to want to be part of that, so they're going to start on it a little bit early.
Right.
And so it's obvious what could occur. And you know, I put it out to several people. John Major once made the statement in Great Britain that overnight, trillions of dollars move by satellite from banks to banks for interest rate purposes and all kinds of reasons, just trillions of dollars. And we had a failure of one satellite, Galaxy 4, and it was catastrophic. Pagers went down, ATMs stopped working, and
gas stations. You couldn't get gas if you wanted to use. Use the gas station.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So if we had that on an even slightly larger scale, there would be big, big disruptions,
Again, it's not a question of if. The question is when, and as we become more technically dependent. I mean, I can remember growing up, going out and fixing my car.
Sure.
I can remember going out there, rebuilding carburetors and tuning it up.
Try it now.
Yeah, it's a whole different world, and large part of us is a throwaway society. If an appliance goes dead, there's nothing you can do about it. You just kind of junk it.
That's right.
But now you take the dependence and you increase it. E-commerce is really developing. I mean, billions of dollars are going to go into e-commerce. You have any problems with the network, and very quickly, I mean, if you wanted to find a way of getting at the United States, if you were a terrorist, that's the place you would go. I don't think you would go biological. I think biological would generate a lot of fear, but electronically you could really cause some havoc, and I'm not sure that that's not being attempted even right now.
For how long have you been publishing the Earth Changes newsletter?
The first issue came out in 1991. That was when I warned about that year and the earthquakes that were coming. I did it because of the earthquakes I saw happening in 92.
Right. So ever since then, it has been a regular feature, and now I guess it comes how frequently to people?
It's bimonthly.
It twice
comes
a
out,
month.
Six times a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's 16 pages in full color. Each issue, I cover all of the earthquake or earth change activity since the last issue. So there's an index of all of the different things that have happened, and then we track the things that I've said.
Mm-hmm.
Confirmations, misses, questionables. Each issue I feature a section called Future Trends where I update my predictions. If I've had a prediction that said something's going to happen in 98 to 2001, and I now get some new information that says, okay, I can hone that date a little better, or the location, I put that in there. I also have news articles that I think are really important, things that get buried or don't get pushed. The same things you do when you find things, you tell your listeners.
Sure.
I do a similar thing where I say, this is something that's very important that I found as a news item, and we research it out, and then we'll focus that on what's how it relates to today. And then there's a another section I do that covers different things. We've had issues on the crop circles. We've had issues on the Great Pyramid of Egypt, who built it, why it was built. Today I received something on the Miami site, which will...
Wait a minute. I want you to tell them how to subscribe. So is there a phone number or
yes,
something?
Yes. There's two ways you can do it. By calling area code 603-363-4164.
Right. 4164. Now, that's mainly a daytime number?
That's a 9 to 5 Eastern.
9 to 5 Eastern. Area code 603-363-4164. Or
they can do it by fax.
Oh.
603-363-4168.
4168. That's interesting. How do they do it by fax?
People can just put an order in. You can just write on a piece of paper and just say, send me a subscription, and we'll take care of it.
That's it, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. That's a good way to go. The fax number is area code 603-363-4168. And again, the phone number, which I think most will use, is area code 603-363-4168. And I wanted to be sure and get that in now. Gordon, when we come back, we're again at the bottom of the hour. You mentioned three things that I really, really, really want to cover. And number one is Miami. I'm dead in the middle of that one right now. And then a little bit about crop circles and the pyramid, because I know a man named Zahi Awas, who is the director of antiquities at Giza in Egypt. I was there. And I know that Zahi Awas and company, at midnight, January 31st of 1999, they are going to place the gold capstone back on the Great Pyramid. And depending on what you believe the pyramid is, and some believe it's a big machine, there are some out there who say it's going to be like turning a power switch on. So we'll ask about that. This is Coast to Coast AM. Gordon, before I forget, I wrote it down when you said to. Miami, I've been at the head of this story now for some time, along with several others. You know what they've discovered in Miami. There is a gargantuan battle going on between a developer with a $100 million project and this circle they have discovered down there that appears ancient. They're studying it. The archaeologists are looking at it, and it's in danger of being plowed down. What do you know?
I saw lots of times what triggers visions for me is seeing some photographs, and someone from Miami had sent me one. I didn't expect it. I just opened the letter, and when I saw it, I immediately started getting visions, started seeing the movie screens, and so the screens that I saw first was hammer jacks. They were, and the second screen I saw is that they were people there with saws and cutting up blocks. It looked like they did when they built the Aswan Dam and they flooded that area. They cut up pieces of the monuments and moved them.
Yeah.
I saw that, and then the third one I saw was an area that was entirely fenced. I looked at that again this morning. And I only see one vision now, and the vision that I see is a fenced area. What that tells me is that something is going to happen very soon, probably within a week or less, that's going to make that a protected site. Now, I know that Florida has a law that says that is a 30-day deal, and the developer can use it unless they can prove it was a burial site.
All right.
There's going to be some discussion or talk about that. There's enough indications that this may very well be a burial site. I think in the end they will find that it isn't, that it's a ceremonial site. I had just a stream of visions on it. And what I saw was actually it was like watching a movie of that. And I got a date of around 1200 A.D., and I saw it as a major trading area, and that was some kind of a spiritual center, a ceremonial center, where people came to for marriages. They came for festivals of different times of the year.
Any sense of how long ago?
About 800 years ago.
Wow.
Though I saw other visions that showed that same site, though the water levels were much different when I saw it, showed that site dating about 3,000 years ago. So my sense is that site's been occupied for over 3,000 years, but that the actual construction of this particular ceremonial center, which is what I would call it, was done about 800 years ago. The interesting thing is the dress of the people that I saw really surprised me, because I had read in the paper that they thought that it might be Indians who were native to that area, perhaps 500 years ago.
Right.
Yet what I was clearly seeing was not that at all. I was seeing the things that I saw when I went to Mexico to Teotihuacan. I would have to say that the people that I saw there were Mayan, because they had that same kind of look, the same kind of a headdress, pigmentation of the skin, the colors. It's all I could think about is that this was a Maya center. Maybe, I don't know if it's an outpost or what, but there was a lot of trading going on, because there were there's going to be another discovery that will occur not too far from there, but it's in the water, probably 100 or 200 yards from that site in the shallow water. They're going to find other things, and I think it'll confirm a lot of the things that some people are suspecting, that this indeed was a major site.
What you are
the good news is that I do not see the site.
God, I hope you're right.
Tampered with.
I hope you're right. I really hope you're right. And the late news is you might be right. They're getting prepared to exercise eminent domain to save it. It's been the most remarkable story, and we've been on it every single day. Now, Egypt, the pyramids. The 31st of December at midnight, they're going to put the gold capstone back on the Great Pyramid. That should be a rather interesting moment, I would think.
I don't know anything about that. I haven't heard about that. I went to Egypt. My guides sent me there about 4 or 5 years ago, and directed me to go to the Great Pyramid. So I went just as a tourist. I didn't go with a group, and I booked it, and within 2 weeks we were there.
Right.
And when I was there, I had nonstop visions. I mean, I spent probably a day or two just receiving vision after vision after vision about that site. And and then of course, in my book, I detailed, so I won't go into it now, but I detailed all of it there. But the prime thing was that while I was there, I went inside of the Great Pyramid. And I understand you were there, so you know the awesomeness of it. It's just...
The words would not come to me. I got to lay in the sarcophagus, and I thought it was all a big joke, ha, ha, ha. And I suddenly went silent, and it was as though every fiber of my body was being affected by an energy. You know, it sounds real New Agey, but it's the truth.
Well, it was magical. I mean, I purposely did not read any of the books about it before I went. I wanted to keep a clean, open mind to it. I suspected it wasn't a tomb, as had been reported.
Mm-hmm.
My previous guides have told me that it was over 12,500 years old, and who built it, and so I knew those basic things. So when I went inside the pyramid to get to the up to the great gallery,
right.
Grand gallery, there was one of the Egyptian authorities that was there who kind of watches, and it was the strangest thing happened. I mean, there must have been, you know, there's lines there all the time.
Oh yes,
it's closed right now, but there's all kinds of lines. And so he said, "Do you want to go up to the chamber?" And I said, yes. And I thought he was going to ask for money, because in Egypt, everybody asked you for money for everything.
That's right.
And so I just automatically reached in my pocket, you know, to give him something, because I figured, okay, here it is. It's a hassle, but I'm here. I want to go there. And he said, no, he wouldn't. He didn't take it. He says, you go. And he stopped everybody. And I went up there, and I was up there for 45 minutes. And he did not allow anybody to come up. I then came back downstairs, walked down the gallery, and I saw him there, and I went to give him some money again. And he says, no. He says, you're supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the strangest thing. And while I was there, I did the same things that you did, but I clearly saw the whole machine working. That was the most amazing thing. While I was
machine?
There.
Machine?
It was built as a machine. The construction of it, the whole Giza Plateau, which includes today, of course, there's three pyramids. Cheops is the Great Pyramid, and then the Sphinx is there, and there's other structures that are around, and they have since found some boats and other things. When I was seeing it, the construction was only there was just the construction of the Great Pyramid, yet there was another item there that it wasn't the Sphinx, but it was in the same areas as the Sphinx. It was a large head, a huge head, with a likeness of somebody who would have African qualities to it. And that's the only thing. I remember seeing that, but there was no other stuff. But there was all this construction going on. There were black people working. There were bronze-colored people working. There were white people working. Mm. And I looked in the sky, and I could see these huge flying machines. They were like the Goodyear blimp. That's all I can remember. They looked like blimps, but they were silent. And underneath of their baskets, they had these ropes, and they were ferrying blocks to the site. They were bringing these blocks up, coming up the river, and then they would anchor off, and they would unload these blocks. And so I watched the construction of it. And the Great Pyramid, the Grand Gallery, which is massive. I mean, this thing is huge by any standards, and the perfection of construction is such that we couldn't build that monument today.
No question.
We've tried to do models of it, scales of it. We failed.
Even the Japanese failed.
Yeah. But I saw this in the Grand Gallery. I saw this instrument, which was a very huge machine that had rollers in it on the ceiling and on the floor and on two walls, tracks. And this machine moved up and down kind of like an elevator would, but at an angle. Instead of vertically, it moved at an angle. And there was a kind of a likeness of a bird. It was a strange-looking bird, though, but very large. And in its talons, it had this faceted, clear, looks like glass. Could have been crystal. I don't know what it was, but I could see that. And the machine itself would move silently up and down on these tracks, yet there was no openings that it could shine through anything. So whatever was happening, I realized it had to happen at some other, you know, there was nothing to block it. And that's when I started getting all of this communications. These guides came to me and said, we will tell you what this machine was used for. And it said basically, the best that we can tell you is that it's a time machine. It was designed as a form of an observatory that allowed the study of the Earth's position in the heavens. That was very critical to this machine. So they were able to study the heavens with a kind of a telescope that did not have an optic system. It worked on another principle entirely, and that's what this carriage that moved up and down, tuned, if you will, to the quadrant of the sky that it wanted to look at. But in addition to that, it provided, and that's what you sat inside of or lay down inside of the
yes
of the king's chamber
yes
in the sarcophagus
yes.
And that's part of the machine itself. People came to go through a period or a process of initiation there. So if you can imagine designing a machine kind of like an observatory of today, where you would go and you might learn about the stars, but it, not only would you learn about the stars and the heavens and how these cycles in the heavens affect the Earth, which is very important because they knew great changes were coming. So that was part of the reason for designing this thing. The other part of it was that by being in certain chambers, now there's only three chambers that are known, the queens, the kings, and what they call the pit. However, my information said there were seven chambers above the pyramid and seven chambers below the pyramid. And
I'm certainly aware of some above already.
Yeah. Then on top of the pyramid, there's no capstone on there currently, and the question was whether there ever was one. But the one that I saw, and they said that it would be found, in 95 it would be found. Well, there's nothing's come out that's indicated they've ever found it, so I assume that prediction is a miss until it shows up someday. But it said that it was an alloy of copper and gold, and it was hollow in metal, and it sat on top of the pyramid, mm-hmm. and that there was a passageway internal to the pyramid that allowed, or stairs that allowed it to exit at the top of the pyramid, mm-hmm. so people could go up inside of the top of that, and it was an integral part of the machine in some fashions. It would work without it, but with it, it allowed some other things to go on. And the other things that it allowed to go on is that when the instrument was fueled, and it was fueled by gases, those air shafts that everybody talks about were never air shafts. In fact, they were sealed. I mean, it's cut halfway into the granite. It's only by chiseling away did they actually find them. But they were like valves, if you will. They were conduits that they were able to measure the pressure that was inside of this machine, because when these gases were activated, incredible pressures were exerted inside the machine, and the gases, along with the star energy that they were collecting in the instruments, allowed this machine to actually bend time. They could actually look at a star and not see it as 10 light years away. They could look at the star in today's time. So that was a big breakthrough in an observatory today. Instead of looking at something that died 10 years ago, you could see it in real time.
You have just given me more new information on the pyramids than I could have ever imagined. And all of this came to you when you were there?
It came to me there. In fact, it was so remarkable to me that I published it in the newsletter immediately, and then I continued getting information, and then it was so much that I had to put it in the book. It was just more than I could gather, because the details that came, the specifics of how they built it and what things are used for and its location on the Earth, and it was just so much data. And then, you know, I stayed there. I never left the Giza Plateau. We had plans to do all of Egypt, but I just kept going back.
I understand.
And when I would go back, that same guy would be there, and he would just let me in.
I have one other piece of news for you that you may not know. The same man, Dr. Hawass, has just announced that he plans, as you know, it's closed now,
yes.
and he now has plans to permanently close the Great Pyramid. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I have spoken with him. He called at one time just to ask my insights on things, and I told him what would be found next and where it would be found. I gave him the actual specifics of it, of how to find it and where to find it. And then he just thanked me and said goodbye, and that was the last conversation we ever had. So I never knew from 95 on whatever happened with that information. The information that I had was that underneath the Sphinx were these large chambers, and how to get access to it and where it leads to, and more importantly, the archives that are stored there. It's like a time capsule. There is a series of rooms that have artifacts from... Some of the artifacts date back 200,000 years. Most of the artifacts are current to that day, which was 12,500 years. So it's a whole history of the culture, who built it, why they built it, and most importantly, predictions that they left behind for a very specific time in history.
Do you believe, Gordon, that the world is now ready for the information that would be revealed should that be opened? In other words, that we... our origins are not as we thought, but rather there have been people on this earth or creatures on this earth long, long ago. Is the world ready for that?
We are. I think perhaps we've been ready for a little while. Part of what science has done is enabled us to date a very civilized, very intelligent human being 10,000-20,000 years. You know, we've got digs in Turkey and other places that date 18,000-20,000 years, where they have tile and plumbing and we've got a lot of stuff that we found that we just doesn't make any sense. You know, it's found in strata that we can date to 50,000 years, but it doesn't make any sense because we couldn't possibly have that technology then. With this acceleration that we talked about earlier, with the internet, with all of this energy that's moving so fast, 20 years ago, if you had your show and you were talking about aliens, my guess is, and I think the statistics would have proved it, that it was a minority of the people that believed that there was life out there. Here it is now. I don't know the last time that they ran that survey, but I'm willing to bet you it's better than 70%.
I bet it is, too. Gordon, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. You can order a copy of this program, folks, by calling 1-800-917-4278. I promise phones when we come back. So much new information. 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back. Best advertising is word of mouth. We already did that. I don't know. My computer's, it may be, it's Y2K striking me already. That's what it is. Gordon, welcome back. Are you there, Gordon?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. I've got a lot of people that have been hanging on the line for a long time, so if you don't mind.
Sure.
All right, here they come. First time caller line, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion and Art Bell. Hello.
Hi, Art. Is this me?
It's you.
All right, this is J.C. I'm calling from Harrison Township, Michigan.
Yes, sir.
And listening to this good soul discuss the connection between man, the planet, and the universe, the electromagnetic connection, reminded me of your rallying of good energy. Huh. Put out the fires in Florida to show that we truly do affect our environment.
Yes.
And I was wondering if tonight, if Mr. Gordon may have seen even in his visions, that this might not be the underlying purpose for Art Bell's existence and why your show has survived against the powers that be, as we come to a crossroads that possibly your following now is large enough to be directed in a positive manner that we can do something favorable.
Boy, is that a good question. Gordon, let me just add a little bit to what he just said and ask you a question. It was about a year ago that I began to naively, I think, begin some experiments. You know, I've got millions in my audience. And there were some areas of Florida that were in severe drought. There were fires. It was terrible. I said, why don't we try an experiment? Everybody concentrate on bringing rain to Florida. Well, there was no forecast of rain, Gordon. Guess what? Within 24 hours, I actually had them stop and envision moisture forming and clouds forming and precipitation falling. And we did that, and within 24 hours it rained. Cutting a long story short, Gordon, I did that experiment again in Texas, again in Western Canada. We did a total of 6 experiments. Every single one of them worked. And then all of a sudden I stopped, and it began to scare me. And I said, I'm not sure that I know what the hell I'm doing. And people would say, there's a terrible hurricane coming. Let's do a mass concentration. Let's try it. And I thought, you know, all of this might boomerang on me. And instead of having the desired effect, I might hold a hurricane off land for a while. And it would grow to a Category 5 and then slam into land, and somehow I'd get blamed for everything. In Texas, we brought rain, and then they had flooding. So it's like I was kind of naively toying around with the power that I did not understand. And I haven't gone back to it, and I'm afraid to go back to it. Any advice?
There's no doubt in my mind that that group power is incredible. I mean, we manifest what we collectively think. even when we're not aware of it. In fact, usually when we're not aware of what our thoughts are, they're collectively working at some level. Back in the 80s, I did extensive research trying to figure out what was happening to me, and part of that research did deal with affecting physical matter, objects, and then eventually it led to do things like that. You can do it, but every action triggers other actions.
Exactly.
Such as in your case, you spoke of the rain and then the floods.
Yes.
I think, to answer your caller's question, is that the audience that listens to your show, the gains that I see are not that we can necessarily change things or divert hurricanes or things of that nature, but it's to increase awareness that we are more than we believe we are. And as your audience becomes more aware of things, we take more control of our life. The Miami Circle is a classic case where enough energy has been generated that something's going to happen. We don't know the outcome. I've given you my prophetic sense on it.
Yes.
But we still don't know the outcome of it.
Right.
We do know that if it hadn't happened, it would have surely went in a direction that I saw, which was it was dug up. So we can effectuate a change. I have learned to stay away from those kind of issues. You just don't know. And making a statement, for example, that I'm going to stop, I'm going to create rain, but I'm going to trust that divine spirit is somehow going to watch out everything else, is not enough.
Yeah, we just don't understand the mechanism. Yes, it can be done. I've seen it done. We did it. But I'm very worried about what I don't understand. In other words, if I bring rain here, then maybe a flood occurs, or maybe something else, a drought occurs somewhere else. I don't know what I'm doing.
It is no different, literally, it is no different than some of the technologies, the super secret technologies that we've developed and other nations have developed with weather control. Everything that machines can do, we can do. We're just trying to mimic technically what we already can do. When we live in harmony in a community, very magical things happen because there is the support of the spirits, if you will, the nature spirits, the elements in that area, and so the harmony exists with nature. So you have to kind of work with it. Native American philosophy is the closest that I know of to that kind of a belief system, and it's one that I try to live by every day.
Part two of his question I also would like to ask about, and that is, and it can apply, I think, to you and to me as well. It's a question I've asked myself a million times, Gordon. I guess you followed me over the years as I have followed you, and we both have led remarkable lives, and a lot of times in my life, I sit down and I say to myself, how has all this happened to me? How has this grown out of control the way it has? I didn't seek it. It just happened. And at times you feel like you're chosen, or you've made a deal with the devil, or, you know, I mean, you imagine, your mind imagines all kinds of things. Gordon Scallion, why have you been put in the position you've been put in? Art Bell, why is he in the position he's in? What's going on?
I think each of us comes into this world with divine gifts. There is no one I've ever met that does not have a divine gift. It's how that gift is used and whether we're willing to accept it. And when I had more time and I used to do workshops on intuitive development, people would say, I really want to be able to do some of the things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, okay, let me show you how to see auras, because that's a relatively simple thing we can do in one seminar. When people would see them, they would simply panic and shut down. I mean, totally terrified of it.
Sure.
And so in their particular case, they weren't ready at that moment for it. So I've come to realize that we are all chosen. We have a destiny, if you will. And along that destiny, we have all these pathways that we can take. It's like earth changes. You know, we're all warned about earth changes in dreams, everybody. The question is whether we want to deal with it, go into denial, listen to it, work around it,
sure,
work with it.
Sure.
People who come into the world with certain skills, communications, such as you and myself. When we get touched, I call it, you know, it's the awakening that we talked about in the early days with you. And we get this awakening, and there's an inner urge for us that to communicate, to somehow let people know that there's something else out there. In your case, we would have to track it all the way back to your ham radio days. We'd have to say that was your training ground.
It was.
And back then, you would probably had no idea, not even the foggiest idea, that you would be where you are now. And it's because when you're on that path, and even though you don't know all the answers, you don't know the whys, you just know that it's right, and you know that it'll be tough sometimes. Sometimes it'll be disastrous. But there's always that inner feeling that you're doing the right thing.
It's been all of that.
And the right thing is that when you're doing things that other people benefit, there is that support that goes along with it from all kinds of realms that come to you. So in your case, in my case, we're just following our destiny. We could have shut it down. You recently had an opportunity to do that.
Yes, I did.
Back on path.
Yes.
It may happen again. You'll still be back on path.
It's an odd thing to contemplate, and I have many times. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, this is Dan in Virginia. It's
Hello, Dan.
Fascinating show. Gordon, I have a quick question. It's kind of a two-part question. Nostradamus has predicted something major happening in July of 1999, and that's one part of my question. I wanted to know if you had any visions around that time. And secondly, in any of your visions, do you see, an asteroid in the picture somewhere?
Oh, good question. All right. Nostradamus in the latter portion of 99.
Okay. I am not as well versed on Casey or Nostradamus. I have tended to stay away from the material so that it wouldn't interact with me, but it's impossible because every time I do a show I'm introduced to material. The quatrain you're speaking about says that in the seventh month of 1999, I have seen that quatrain.
Yes.
And I do understand that quatrain. I'm not sure how I understand just about all of those quatrains. And I'm not sure how or why, but I do. You have to remember, when he was alive 500 years ago, the calendar that he used was an astrological calendar. So I don't believe it's July. I believe it's November.
November.
And I believe what he's talking about is the fact that the world at that time goes through great change. And I think that I believe it's solar flare, the trigger. And I think November is the potential month. I see a lot of changes in November anyways. But I think that particular quatrain was referring to an event in November, an event, I believe, dealing with electrical forces, which I would see relating to the sun. On the second part of the question...
An asteroid.
I do not see an asteroid coming in. I had a whole series of visions, and I described them in detail in Notes from the Cosmos. But what I see was that when the magnetic shift occurs, the magnetic fields in our whole solar system begin to kind of vibrate. You can't change one magnet. You can see the Earth as a magnet without affecting all the others.
Right.
So whatever happens on the Earth is going to happen on other planets. And one of the things that I saw happening was that one of the moons of Mars gets pulled from its orbit. And that I saw heading towards Earth and deflecting off of the atmosphere. So it doesn't hit Earth, but it hits the atmosphere and causes a major shudder, which in turn creates other problems. So, but other than that, I have not seen anything, comet or asteroid, hitting the Earth up to the year 2050, which is pretty much the cutoff time of the things that I see.
All right. I'm going to ask about that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion. Hi.
Good evening, gentlemen. What a show.
Thank you. Where are you?
This is Joan in Minneapolis.
Okay, Joan, you're going to have to yell at us a little bit. You're not too loud.
All right. Can you hear me better?
Much better. Go right ahead.
Yes. Remind me to ask about holes in the ice. The reason that I called is I wanted to know if Gordon has seen... Excuse me, what I saw 14 months ago to do with plates moving, tipping.
Tectonic plates, you mean?
Earth plates.
Yes.
And the plates that we're living on are just the outer bark of the tree, so to speak. They're plates underneath that will be moving also. That would raise Florida quite high and cause there to be direct land to Cuba. Have you seen anything like that?
The plates that you have seen, I'm not sure if it's dreams or visions or however you perceived it, are very similar. You're describing similar things that I've seen. The plates, when the magnetic shifts occur, these plates actually shift positions. Some buckle, some come up from the seabed, like in the Atlantic, especially off of Florida's east coast. There, I see large landmass coming up. Actually, a mini continent formed there.
Sure, take a look at his map.
I see.
But in Cuba. And a landmass going from Florida to Cuba, that I have not seen through 2012. I have seen Florida tilted.
Yeah.
The East Coast kind of tilting, and places from probably Naples, Florida, south, pretty much gone underwater, including the Keys.
Oh.
Most of Cuba. As these plates move and shift. They may shift again. You know, it's like having a bunch of marbles and you put them on a bowl of Jello, and
yeah.
You kind of shake the bowl. These marbles are going to move around for a while, and the Jello is going to move around. And I fully suspect that when these shifts occur, we're going to see land masses that are going to come up and then go back down. Others will simply come up and stay. But it'll all shift around.
All right, very very quickly, ma'am, because we don't have a lot of time.
I don't understand what is going to cause this. I see the topography of the lower United States changed by terrific winds, and the debris and the earth, the terrain is actually moved by these winds, and the weight of the accumulation of debris. Starts the tipping and breaking up of the plates. Is that what you saw?
I think that's more of an after effect. I think the primary effect is.